FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is December 3rd, 2018. Just 28 more days left to this year. Well, what's going on here in resource space? What about base metals? Are they oversold? What about the seasonality of gold and precious metals? Is this year going to be different, or is it going to be like most of the other years? Well, we've got a new guest here, somebody we've been trying to get on the show for a long time, but she's so busy that it's really hard to get a hold of her. I'm talking about Gwen Preston. I'm talking about her site, resourcemaven.ca, as in Canada. Gwen, welcome to the Financial Survival Network.
Thank you so much, Kerry. It's lovely to be here.
Hey, so base metals had a sell-off. Are they oversold or were they overbought in the first place and that's why they're going down now?
Good way to phrase the question, I would say. But I would go with they are oversold. I mean, zinc, if we start with zinc, zinc had this incredible rally, right? In 2016 and 2017, the price just moved in a very significant way. And then in 2018, it came off. Now, part of that is just when a price goes up so much, it's going to ease afterwards. But really what was going on there was all of these concerns about trade wars, right? Trade war anxiety really started to dominate the base metal space. And that hurt zinc, and it similarly hurt copper. Copper is also off for the year, and that's also, I think, because of these concerns about the trade wars and whether they are going to significantly erode demand for base metals. But underneath all of that, the fundamentals for both copper and zinc are what I would say ridiculously strong. So, I mean, when you look at copper is a market that the globe churns through like 21 million tons of copper every year. If we go out just a few years, like just go out to 2025, once we get to that point, for 10 years after that, we're looking at being short 5 million tons of copper a year, starting in only 5 or 6 years. So that's like, we need the market to grow 25% in 5 years. That's a really, really large number. And that's not based on projections of massive growth, you know, overly optimistic outlooks. That's based on, you know, the slow burn of growth that just is, plus electrification, which adds most of the extra demand. The demand growth is 70% from electrification. So that's everything from, you know, new power grids, electric cars, electric buses, all of these things. So copper demand growth is really intense and there just isn't the supply to match it. And we could talk about that for a long time, but it's the classic story of the bear metal or the bear market in metals really took a lot of projects offline. So they didn't get permitted, they didn't get advanced, they didn't get planned. And so there just isn't the big projects ready to supply that gap. And they won't continue to, they won't start stepping up to get ready unless copper prices get a little bit stronger again. Story with zinc, almost exactly the same. Zinc demand outstrips supply within a few years. There just aren't the projects to fill that gap. Zinc used to always have, you know, sort of extra supply that would come online when prices went high from projects in China. Those aren't happening anymore because of environmental restrictions. Zinc is very similar to copper. The fundamentals are really strong. But this trade war situation just clamped down on these markets like nobody's business in 2018. And the metals and by result, the equities are, I think, incredibly oversold. How is that going to resolve? Well, it clearly depends a lot on the trade war and how long it takes or when the market gets some reassurance about what this trade war is actually going to look like. And we're in the midst of that right now with the G20 having just happened. But as we get a little bit of reassurance about what these tariffs are going to look like and people can start to understand their impact, hopefully they're not as bad as we all think. But even if they are pretty bad, global growth would have to derail completely for us to have enough copper and zinc going forward. Like, it would have to go like off the tracks, just die off. Global growth would have to. And so that's not what I expect, even if this tariff war goes on for a bit. So I just think that they're really oversold because the tariff anxiety, investors, when they're faced with an uncertainty, like what are tariffs going to do? They never trade on the side of optimism, do they? They trade on the side of caution. And so the side of caution has had them overselling base metals and base metal equities in 2018.
Now, there are those out there who say, hey, we use a lot less copper than we used to. We don't use it for phone lines anymore. Substitutes are on the way, nanotechnology and such. But that's not really what's happening there. There really is no substitute for copper, is there?
There really isn't. And sure, as technologies evolve, certainly things change and some of the uses of copper change, but at the end of the day, we use copper to move electricity. And, electrification, like I say, is the biggest additional demand in the copper space. And I mean, that's everything from large parts of the developing world that straight up don't have power lines. That's not a new need for copper. That's an ongoing need for copper is bringing electrical service to places that don't have it, all the way through to, the fact that an electric vehicle uses, I think it's something like 3 times the amount of copper that an internal combustion engine vehicle uses. So all of those, if that's sort of the car example, but that kind of transfer, like from old technology to the new electrification style technology, it all just needs copper, and we don't have enough.
Yeah, so really, we're in this situation where demand is going to cross supply on the upside, and things are going to happen. So what pricing do you see for copper over the short term, intermediate, longer term? It's got to go higher, because if you want more of something, then there's got to be more reward to produce it. Otherwise, if companies are losing money to produce it, they're going to cut back. I mean, it's just basic economics, even though many of you out there don't believe that basic economics apply. But certainly when it comes to base metals, it applies better than just about any place, doesn't it? I mean, really, like, mining is the worst business in the world, except for when it really works well and you're on the right end of the cycle, right?
Absolutely. No, you, all of the things that you've said make good sense to me. I mean, copper currently is trading, what is, I think it's about 280, 285, somewhere in that range per pound today. I mean, that's a reasonable price. When you look at, like a 5-year copper trend, that's sort of in the middle of the 5-year price range. But remember, first of all, that 5-year range has been predominantly in a bad market, not in a good market. Copper prices can certainly be much better in a good market. And really, when you look at, when analysts go through and crunch the numbers on what copper price is needed to incentivize new projects, because that's what it comes down to, right? We need more mines. We need mine expansions. We need producers to be incentivized to spend the money to produce more copper, just like you said. And when you do the numbers, $325 is sort of a conservative baseline for sufficient motivation for those, for a good number of projects to come online. And it can't just sort of edge to 325 and hold there. It has to, it's got to move there. It's got to show some stability there. It's got to trade in and above that range for a while, so that companies, producers have the confidence that it's going to stay in that sort of range. But that's a requirement, I would say. And it's not going to happen tomorrow because we don't have the clarity on trade wars, which is, like I say, is overshadowing these really strong fundamentals. But as we get clarity on that, whether that clarity shows that we're going to be on the worse end or the better end of the range that that tariffs could take, we're still, clarity is what we need. And as we get some of that clarity, then the shadow will lift and copper will be able to start trading based on fundamentals. And so I do think we can see, you know, does that mean we get sort of like a 25% increase in the copper price? I think that's quite reasonable in like the next year. And of course, when you get an increase like that in the copper price, the whole reason that we play mining stocks instead of trading metals is because we're supposed to get leverage from the stocks, right? And so, you know, a copper producer like, I don't know, First Quantum should get a multiple of the copper price increase.
Mm-hmm. So stronger producers, better producers, they're going to be out front. They're going to lead this rally, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what you want to look at is copper's a bit, it's hard to find like a really pure play copper producer. It sounds funny because copper is such a significant metal, but copper is copper is produced alongside other metals a lot of times, or a lot of copper producers are not North American listed because they're South American, more South American. But mm-hmm. When you're looking at copper, what you're looking at any other really in base metals.
Yeah.
You want companies that have strong balance sheets, so they're not at risk, just sort of from a fundamental financial perspective. You want a strong balance sheet, so not a lot of debt. You want low costs, and you want them to have the ability and the plans in place, hopefully funded plans in place, to increase production. Those are sort of the things, if you want to distill it down, those are, I think, the three most important things that the market looks for when it wants to invest in a copper play to get leverage to a rising copper market. They want, from a producer, they want a strong balance sheet. They want low production costs so that you can get the most benefit from a higher price, right, if your costs are lower. And they want the icing on the cake is they want production growth, in progress. So is it a new mine? Is it an acquisition? Do they have it funded? How's that going to look? But, you know, over the next few years, are they going to be producing more copper down the road? Those are the three things that I think create the best plays for leverage on copper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So why don't we talk about precious metals? Are we going to see an end of the year rally, beginning of the year rally? Tax loss selling probably pretty much concluded now. So where do we head from here, Gwen?
Yeah, I mean, gold is forever interesting. I was about to say gold is really interesting right now. Gold is always really interesting. Perhaps that's just my perspective. But anyway, gold has held up, I would say, very well this year. There has been, the U.S. dollar has done really well, which should act against gold. But gold has held up against that quite nicely. And it's been interesting. I have in the last few years often heard the comment, why isn't gold getting more safe haven buying? And my answer has always been, well, safe haven against what, right? Like when this broad stock markets continue to march skyward, nobody's sheltering from anything. They're just making money in technology stocks hand over fist. So if you're not sheltering from something, then gold isn't going to get that kind of buying. But we are in a situation now where volatility in the broad stock market really is increasing. The markets are down overall this year. We haven't seen that yet, right? And we get these volatile episodes, and there's a lot more uncertainty. For a couple of years now, there's been questions about overvaluation and the influence of stock buybacks and how are rising rates can influence all that, blah, blah, blah. But now I think we're starting to see those concerns really manifest. So, for example, the FANG stocks that have really been important in leading this stock market rally that we've had for 9 years, whatever it is, they are down like 20% across the board. And that really matters because they have driven the market to a disproportionate degree. And so if the magic comes out of the FANG stocks, if people start getting concerned about the market and start to question whether they can continue to just own indexes, own a technology index and make money, that is what really turns investors toward to look for safe havens. And gold is the one that stands out. Yes, the US dollar also gets it, but gold stands out in those situations. And so I think we're really entering that era right now. And at the same time, right now, like you point out, it's the middle, it's December. And gold is pretty darn reliable for having a run in January and February. Now, how big it is, how big that run is, clearly depends on everything else that's going on. So that differs from one year to the next, but pretty reliable that gold strengthens through January and February, that gold stocks strengthen through January and February. And part of that, part of the rally, is fueled by the tax loss buying or tax loss selling that you mentioned. So stocks get really oversold in November, December, and then people start scooping them up because they're bargain basement deals. And so that adds buying, that creates its own buying that can really lift some of those gold stocks in anticipation of this January, February rally. So I think from both a very macro perspective and from a equity specific, like a sector specific perspective, I am pretty optimistic that we're going to have some fun in January and February in the gold sector, gold and silver, in the gold and silver sector, because it's just everything's lined up exactly the way you want it to be for that to happen.
And, you know, it's interesting you say that because I do agree with you. But on the other hand, aren't we at a generational shift, right, where millennials are kind of taking over the show from boomers and they just don't understand resource investing. They don't understand precious metals. They don't understand what money really is, witnessed by the boom and bust in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. You know, they're really an ignorant generation and they don't take direction well, many of you millennials out there. And when you look at things like platinum selling at two-thirds, three-quarters of palladium, but selling less than gold, it could be indicating, hey, maybe the market's right. Maybe there has been a shift here that you and I just haven't picked up on. Is that possible?
I mean, that is absolutely a factor. That is completely in play. I have a few thoughts when it comes to this whole issue. One of them is that I think for decades now, it's considerably longer than I've been in the industry, but in chatting with others, when you go to a mining investment conference, there's often this comment like, everybody here has gray hair. They're all going to die and stop investing soon. What's going to happen? The industry's screwed. But that comment has persisted for decades, which means that new people grow into, perhaps it's the time of life, maybe it's later after the stress, the financial stresses of, you know, raising family are a little bit past. Maybe that's more when people move into appreciating gold and the safe haven aspect of it. Not totally sure on that, but I do know that that comment has been made for decades in the mining sector, and we still get conferences full of largely gray-haired folks, but they're there every time. So that manages to continue. So that's one side of it. Mm-hmm. The other side is, well, cryptocurrencies are now showing themselves to be already one of the biggest bubbles of all time. I mean, they're not going to go away completely, but it's become very apparent what many of us said at the time when they were going crazy, which is people weren't buying them because they decided that we needed a new system as an alternative to fiat currencies. They were buying them because, guess what? Speculation.
Yeah.
So
bubble.
Speculation is about making money on something that's going up. So if the mining sector starts doing one of its reliable runs, that's the only reason anybody ever invests in mining stocks, is because they can go on really awesome runs. And so guess what? Anybody who wants, people who want to make money will notice that, and they will understand that. All of that said, I totally agree that the mining sector really needs to collectively get better at telling its story. I mean, it's a little bit harder to sell or tell the gold story because we don't need gold in the same way that we need copper and zinc and nickel and silver, uranium and all of these other things. But all those other mined commodities, we really need. So not in my backyard perspectives, or mining is terrible perspectives, don't hold up. I love images like try and draw a picture of your kitchen without any metal in it, without anything in it that's been mined. But are you going to make it? You're going to make your kettle out of wood? Like, what's your plan here? Right?
How about your iPhone?
So there's definitely like there's and that. Along with the fact that quite a few of the negative perceptions of mining are outdated to some degree. I'm not trying to say that mining is this crystal, is this perfect, clean, socially ideal industry by any means, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was 20 years ago. So I think quite a few of the conceptions around mining are dated. So collectively, mining needs to do better at reaching out to younger generations, explaining the story, explaining how we operate now, not doing head in the sand type stuff. So I think the industry, I think the industry will survive. The industry has to survive. We cannot function without the products of mining. The industry has to survive. And so, there's a bit of a struggle right now with money flowing to other things, but that's ebbed and flowed many times before, and I'm sure it will ebb and flow again.
No doubt you're correct. Maybe North America is going to cede this industry to the rest of the world because, it does require large capital investment. It is extractive by nature, so it's going to make things ugly for a while. Now you have to remediate, so that's definitely a plus as far as this generation goes, but they don't really understand that without silver, without copper, like you said, you got nothing. We're back in the Stone Ages. They don't really get this, do they?
No, they don't. And I mean, it goes to as basic as, the idea, I recycle and I buy organic, so I'm good for the planet. And that is so oversimplified and untrue, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can poke a lot of holes in recycling. I'm not saying people shouldn't recycle, but at the end of the day, recycling is not super effective either.
If you don't say it, I'll say it, Gwen. I mean, it's pointless.
Yeah.
It's a waste. It is one of the most wasteful industries that should have never existed. But anyway, we don't need to get into that debate. But it's
unfortunate because a lot of people believe that that is their way of being better for the environment. When really, I think a lot of that intent, that energy could be much more effectively funneled into, appreciating what we actually do need to use, reducing what we do need to use, and then appreciating what we do need, including metals, and understanding and supporting ways of doing it properly. And I think that's fundamentally the mining industry wants to do it properly. I know a lot of mine operators and geologists, and they don't hate the environment, right?
They want to
do it properly. They're, doing the best they can and providing a needed service. So there's a story there that needs to be conveyed better. I struggle quite often in trying to come up with ways of helping that narrative. I don't know what the answer is, but we need to do a better job of talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, the whole recycling thing is just feel-goodism. It doesn't really substantially contribute to anything to preserving the environment or improving it, other than if you want to get rid of aluminum cans and glass bottles, it's probably pretty good for that. But everything else, all that. So, the industry's got an image problem. It's got a problem with getting these younger people in there. And the opportunities are so great in the industry for the younger generation, and like much of manufacturing, that the young'uns have just turned their nose up at, even though it could be a better career than virtually any other career they could find.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like I say, I agree with what you're saying, but I think greed is a pretty powerful force. So I don't know about the sort of job seeking side of it, that's a different question, but in terms of the investing side, when we get the late cycle expansion that drives commodity prices and metals start to outperform when everything else is starting to be volatile and diminish in its returns in the stock market, you know, greed will bring people back to mining. It's happened many times. It will happen again. Yes, mm-hmm. you know, cryptocurrencies and millennials and whatnot are distracted, but at the end of the day, investing is about making money, and I think that will continue. So I do think that that generalist, that rotation of generalist money into mining, we're set up for that nicely, and we only need a small percentage of the generalist funds to rotate in. And I I've been talking about this for 2 years now, that what we need mm-hmm. is for generalist funds to stop investing completely in technology and to put a small percentage into metals, and we'd be good to go. It sounds from people that I know who are marketing their stories, junior explorers or junior producers, you know, going down to New York, wherever it might be, and talking to these fund managers, and we're talking about like fund managers with a B, billions of dollars. I've heard a bunch of guys come back from those sorts of trips recently and say, you know what? I got meetings that I haven't gotten in years with these guys. And I've heard them say, you know, a bunch of different friends of mine said, they told me we've been making money hand over fist in technology for years, but that's starting to die off. We need the next thing, and we think commodities are it. So they're taking these meetings. They're starting to figure out how to position. Like I say, if they put a few percentage of their capital towards mining, towards metals, it makes our industry tiny compared to a lot of others. So it makes a huge difference when that happens. So maybe millennials won't invest in mining yet, but at the end of the day, they don't really matter that much yet. Right now, what we need are these big fund managers who are managing, you know, largely baby boomer dollars. We need them to put their money into mining.
That's a great point. And yeah, obviously when something becomes urgent, well, it's an essential industry, and you know, the millennials might not have figured it out yet, but like you said, you can't do anything without it. You can't have modern civilization. So they're in for an awakening. And it's a question of one day they wake up and there's $10 a pound copper, or there's $10 a gallon gasoline. One way or another, yeah. they're going to figure out that, hey, electric cars are wonderful, but they're a ways off. I mean, people keep telling me, oh, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. But you know what? There still aren't a lot of electric cars on the road as a percentage of the vehicles out there. It's going to happen, perhaps, but it's going to take.
And I mean, it takes time, but at the end of the day, from a mining perspective, bring on the electric vehicles. You know how much copper they need? You know how much nickel and graphite and lithium and vanadium they need? Like, it's awesome.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. So true. Yeah, all of this is true. Well, because they need all those things, it might slow it down a bit. And not to mention, you know, cobalt and all sorts of other little things that they need that nobody even knows about. But in any event, so you sound like overall you're pretty bullish. You know, maybe in the short term we're going to have these gyrations. They'll keep going back and forth. But in the long term, there is no choice but for prices to go up.
Yes. I'm absolutely certain on. So from base metals, the only thing that could derail price gains for base metals is if we get some major financial crisis that really completely stops global growth in its tracks. That's what it would take for the base metal situation to not be bullish from here. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it's going to take some resolution or some clarity on the trade war situation. It's going to take a little bit of time because it just takes time for these things to turn around. But there's, you know, everything from treatment charges for what, you know, smelters are charging to process zinc, they're desperate for concentrate, through to stockpiles for copper, which are incredibly low, stockpiles for zinc are incredibly low. Like, there's reason to believe it could turn soon. And there's a lot of reason to believe that when it turns, it's going to turn quite sustainably because these fundamentals are so strong. On the gold side, always a little bit harder to predict with gold. I am quite optimistic about a seasonal move just in January, February. So if you're a trader as opposed to a buy and holder, mm-hmm. I think there's good opportunity to pick up some oversold gold stocks right now and hold them for the next 2 months and then sell them in February. I think that's probably going to work out quite well. Longer term, gold always requires just an understanding of everything, the dollar, confidence in the stock markets, some sort of geopolitics to some extent, but really the dollar and confidence in the stock markets and interest rates. Is the Federal Reserve going to step back a little bit on its interest rate hike plans? It sounds like they might. The dot plot that comes out in the middle of December is going to be pretty interesting. If they step back, if they sort of pull back their hike plans in the middle of December, I still think they'll hike rates in December, but I think that the projection for what they're going to do in 2019 might be pulled back a bit. That will push gold, so that's a nice short-term catalyst. At the end of the day, gold depends on the dollar, volatility in the stock markets, and real interest rates. So if you watch those things, they all have the potential to be pretty bullish in the medium term. So I think gold is set up to do well in the medium term. It's just harder at this point to pin down sort of when that's going to kick off, other than having this sort of reliable January, February move coming up.
Yeah, just a matter of when, not if. Anyway,
yeah,
Gwen, so we find your work over at, tell us where we find you.
Sure. So my website is resourcemaven.ca. I publish a series of newsletters that talk about what I'm buying and selling in the metal space. One of them is a very entry-level, call it, newsletter that is designed for generalist investors who are interested in mining but don't know a lot about it and also don't have the huge risk appetite that's needed if you want to play an explorer. So that one's focused on producers and royalty companies and just leverage to metal prices. And then my flagship letter is a weekly newsletter that is about the main stocks I play in, which are more higher risk, higher reward potential stocks in the exploration space. And I explain what I'm seeing out there and what I'm finding interesting and how it's all working. So resourcemaven.ca is where you can find me and where you can sign up for a free trial if you're interested.
All right. Very cool. Hey, we appreciate you coming on. Any questions, comments for Gwen, myself, email us kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. If you're on YouTube, then please subscribe, like, and share. And even if you're not on YouTube, then please share us with somebody else who you think will get some value from the show. Gwen, it's great having you on. First time guest, but we will definitely be having you on again in the future. Be well, and we'll talk to you soon. Happy holidays.
You as well. Thank you so much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.